Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the ID the Future podcast, being broadcast from the Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. This is Casey Luskin, and once again we have on our podcast today Dr. Jeffrey Simmons, a medical doctor from Eugene, Oregon, who's going to talk to us about his personal journey from being a supporter of evolution to a scientific skeptic of Darwinian evolution. And as we talked about on a previous podcast, Dr. Simmons is coming out with a new book entitled Billions of Missing Links, A Rational Look at the Mysteries Evolution Can't Explain, which is due out in February 2007. And I'd like to take this podcast to actually follow up with some questions talking about Dr. Simmons' personal journey into becoming a scientific skeptic of evolution. So, Dr. Simmons, thanks for being on the podcast again.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Simmons, I guess the first question is, have you always been a skeptic of Darwinian evolution?
Absolutely not. In fact, I bought into it entirely until about 10, 12 years ago. I was an ardent believer. It made total sense to me, and all my professors taught me that, and my kids learned it in school, and my friends believed it. It was like a given. And so, no, I was very much pro Darwin, and it was almost like pulling teeth to get me to even look at something that might be arguing the other way.
How about when you were in medical school? What was the attitude towards Darwinism when you were in medical school?
Well, it was just taken for granted or a standard procedure that evolution was the explanation for all the different species and how things evolved. And it really didn't talk about the problems with Darwin's theories. No one would bring that up. It was just, it was a given, like the paint on the wall and the lights on the ceiling. That was the standard procedure, and I guess if you believe contrary to that, you kept it to yourself, but that wasn't the case with me. I believed it and really wasn't interested in learning anything else in those days.
Hmm. Now, Dr. Simmons, I'm not sure exactly if you had experiences like this, but I actually have some good friends who are applying to medical school right now and recently took the MCAT exam, which, as our listeners may know, is a very difficult exam that all medical school applicants have to take. And this friend of mine is a scientific skeptic of evolution himself, and he said that he observed that when taking the MCAT exam, that they really took a very hard-line stance in favor of evolution, almost to an extent that was surprising to him, because it often was a hard-line stance that didn't have anything to do with the questions that were being asked, almost as if they were trying to test students as to where they stood on that subject. And I'm wondering, have you ever had any experience or knowledge with anything like that?
Well, you know, I took my MCATs a long time ago. So it's so long ago, I can barely even remember the trauma of taking them. So I don't know. But I would probably say, guessing that if they did, and they may well have, is that to me it wouldn't have bothered me at that time. And so that would have been fine. I would have answered the questions exactly the way they were hoping I or thinking I might. So it wouldn't have jumped off the table for me.
Sure.
I would now, but it wouldn't live.
Sure. Well, let's go back into your period as being a medical doctor, relying upon Darwin. What kind of medicine do you practice, Dr. Simmons?
Yeah, I'm an internist. That's adult medicine. About 50% of my practice is geriatrics. And, you know, I do a lot of common day things, colds and physicals, but complex things involve heart and lungs and kidneys as well. You know, my job is sort of like a detective. I need to know the physiology. I need to know the chemistry. You know, I need to know the microbiology. I don't just need to look at the person and just say, you know, oh, you're jaundiced. I mean, I need to know a lot more about it. And so, I mean, that would make one wonder how those mechanisms came about as one started to probe into illnesses. You start looking at the physiology. I mean, some of the hormones, for instance, that the body makes, they're sort of like right out of Michael Behe's irreducible complexity, what I call multifaceted irreducible complexity. I mean, they require multiple chemical steps that each on their own are useless, and they have to be extremely precise until they get to making this hormone, which will have a very specific action on a very specific group of cells. One would wonder what would be the in-between steps. I mean, you couldn't have a hormone that partially worked or didn't work at all, just floating around. I mean, for instance, for lack of a a better analogy, kind of imagine a helicopter, a blimp, and a 747 kind of all soldered together. In some fashion, it could still travel, and it finds its way into a hangar that fits it perfectly, and the gangways are perfect for each of those vehicles to exit the passengers and unload their luggage and reload the food for the next trip. I mean, these things are very complicated chemicals with complicated loading docks and complicated functions, and so one sees that medicine, and if that's probably the main thrust of not only the new book, but also of my change in mind about evolution. It just can't happen. Michael Behe's mousetrap is small in complexity compared to what we see in medicine. I'm sure he uses that so the average person can understand what he's talking about. Cause I know he's a biochemist by profession, and I know he knows exactly what I'm talking about. But for the audience and for my book, I'm talking about multiple mouse traps going multiple directions and getting caught up in each other in a variety of ways, and only ways that become one functional mechanism. And so it's impossible.
Perhaps would another analogy be like, these are like chemical circuits. And as we all know, if you break a circuit, you have to have a complete circuit for it to work.
Right.
And what we see in the body are analogous to circuits, and you have to have the whole circuit there, or the rest of the circuit is basically useless.
It's just one circuit, it may be multiple circuits.
Sure. Well, that's, I want to get back to that in just a minute. I'd actually like to go back to your days as an evolutionist, as a medical doctor. Did you rely upon Darwin heavily as a medical doctor?
Well, I don't think the way I practice medicine would be impacted. How I thought about things, maybe, but, I think I still had to know the physiology, I still had to know the microbiology, I still had to know the pharmacology. I don't think it affected the way I did. There are a lot of political issues that kind of go arm in arm with folks who oppose Darwin's theories. And some of those issues are very emotional, and some are very supported by medical schools, and those do impact how some doctors practice. But actually, just ferreting out a belief in the theory of evolution, I don't think impacts at least what I do.
Hmm. Now, so what exactly was it? What started to pique you doubting Darwin? I know you've talked about many of the lines of scientific evidence that and physiological evidence which cause you to question evolutionary explanation, but what was it that first started to cause that doubt in your mind?
Well, I think it's two things which I mentioned in the previous podcast. One was a wife who is very religious and would initiate, or I would, discussions about the topic. And so I'd have to find myself evidence to support what I was saying. And I had difficulty supporting what I had to say, even though I believed it was fact. It turned out it wasn't. That, along with this Francis Hitching book called The Neck of the Giraffe. That's an English author, PhD, who talks about the neck of the giraffe. And in that book, I thought I was picking up a book that was pro-evolution, and I could find some arguments in there that would help support my position. Turned out, he claimed in the front of the book that he was trying to be neutral, just sort of a casual observer walking through a battlefield, but he actually was very strong in my mind against Darwin's theories, with lots of evidence in the fossils and in the animal world and in human bodies that said, there's something wrong here. And so I started looking for other books that support that position. There weren't that many, but Michael Behe's book came along, and Bill Dembski's book was a help, and there's a number of other books that were out there that were coming along that I was starting to lap up to see if what on earth is going on here. I believe one thing, and it's not supported. And I didn't have the problem or the ego that I couldn't admit I was wrong. I didn't have the stature at a university where I might lose my job. I was fairly free to change my mind if I cared to. I had nothing invested per se other than an opinion. An opinion can change. And so it just, the more I looked, the more I saw, and the next thing I know is, hey, I can write a book on this, and I did from a medical doctor's perspective. It's incredible what the body does. I mean, just to give you one example, there's a time in the baby's fetus life, where 250,000 nerve cells, neurons, migrate about every minute. These cells go to specific sites. 250,000 cells go where they're supposed to go in the brain and set up shop, and they connect to as many as 10,000 other nerve cells with lots of little neurological arms. And they communicate with 40 to 100 different types of chemicals. Well, I just, when I started learning things like that, I said, I can't fathom how that came about by steps. I mean, you'd almost need, they said life began 3 to 4 billion years ago. You almost need just those nerve cells to evolve in that time. And we have a whole human body. So it started to make less and less sense. I started to write more and more. I like writing, love writing. And it just kind of poured out.
And although you said your wife is religious, you yourself are not approaching this from a religious perspective. You're not asking religious questions here. Is that right?
I am not asking a religious question. I'm not challenging it from a religious perspective. If you were to ask me directly, do I believe in God? I do. And do I believe in intelligent design? Yes, I do. But I am not part of any formal religious group per se, and I'm not approaching this from a religious perspective at all.
Sure. That was really interesting, Dr. Simmons, and I think you've really enlightened our listeners about your personal journey from being a Darwinist to a Darwin dissenter and what exactly goes on in such a transition. In case our listeners didn't know, Dr. Simmons has a new book coming out entitled Billions of Missing Links, A Rational Look at the Mysteries of Evolution Can't Explain, and it's available for pre-order right now on Amazon.com. This is Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast being broadcast from Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in freezing cold Seattle, Washington. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID of the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.